4, presentation by Brown Armstrong on the audit of the December 31, 2014 financial statements.
Fairly overwhelming numbers wise, though. If you want to get into the weeds. Good for you. Sometimes it's a task for me.
Yeah, no.
Morning.
Morning.
Our audit partner, as well as our audit manager, is here today.
Good morning.
Rosalba Flores is our audit partner, and Ashley Casey is our audit manager. Rosalba will be presenting our independent auditor's report and financial statements for the year ended December 31st, 2014. This is our fourth year with Sisera. In your board packet, you have a copy of the 2014 CAFR, which is our comprehensive annual financial report. The original is sent to our county print services for publication, and in a couple weeks, you'll receive a final copy in your inbox. Before turning the time over to Rosalba, I'd like to highlight some of the CAFR changes for 2014. As John mentioned in his presentation, we implemented GASB 67, financial reporting for pension plans. This had a material effect on our financial statements. Note disclosure 5, net pension liability on page 46 and 47 is new, as well as the additional required schedules and notes within the RSI section of the CAFR. We also elected, as John mentioned, to include two additional schedules related to GASB 68 in the other information of the financial section. GASB 67, I think we all know it, established accounting and financial reporting requirements for public pension plans. This standard, along with 68 for participating employers, which we will implement this year, 2015, are designed to improve the decision usefulness of pension information, reported information, as well as increase the transparency, comparability, and consistency of pension information across governments. The key changes for this standard for 67, as John mentioned, but I'll go a little more into it, is it did separate the pension accounting from the funding of pension benefits. It required the plan to calculate the collective net pension liability, and for participating in employers to recognize their portion of that liability and the related pension expense on their balance sheet. And of course, we have additional note disclosures and required schedules that went along with this. We also implemented Statement 69, Governmental Combinations and Disposals of Government Operations, and Statement Number 70, Accounting and Financial Reporting for Non-Exchange and Financial Guarantees. More information on these statements are included in our footnote 2, Summary of Significant Accounting Policies, on page 40 and 41. There were no material effects as a result of implementing these statements in our financial statements. For 2014, we trued up some reserve accounts to better reflect our actuarial calculations. When a member retires, Sisera's practice is to transfer the member reserves to the retiree reserves. It's what we call funding. And however, we never adjust the retiree reserves after that point for any actuarial gains or losses or a change in actuarial assumptions. So we will be doing a true-up now based on our actual valuation that's performed each year. And if you look at our reserve balances on footnote 8, reserves and designations on page 53 and 54, you'll kind of see a swing on some of the reserves account, and that was because of this adjustment that we did. We added a new schedule of payments to consultants as part of the other supplementary information on page 63 of the CAFR. I spent a lot of time this year working on the footnotes. I mean, from year to year, you just kind of keep adding more information. But I tried to clean them up a bit, and I thank Kurt for working with me on that project. I also changed the format of the actuarial evaluation methods and assumptions. I think it's easier to read and flows much better. We also change a schedule, the actuarial analysis of financial experience schedule on page 102 of the actuarial section. It has a complete new look from the previous year. And lastly, our schedule of funding progress schedule. That used to be in the RSI section. It's now in the actuarial. This is a result of separating funding from accounting information as a result of GASB 67. And I'd like to also take this time to recognize Shannon Mars, if you don't mind just standing up. She's fairly new to CICERA, and she helped me work on this project. She's instrumental in getting the CAFR and the PAFR done. I think I explained last year how this works. She takes my information, whether it's a Word document, Excel, and she puts it in her software publication InDesign fancy application and actually makes it look the way you see it. You've probably noticed that it's a big change from last year, the look of it appearance-wise, and that is a result of her work. So I want to thank you. It's a big job. We have some crazy stories to remember this year by. but I thank you for your hard work and dedication to the project. And I'll now turn the time over to Rosalba.
Thank you. Good morning again, thank you for allowing us to be here. We have completed our auditing procedures for your December 31, 2014 financial statements, and so we are here to present to you the results of our audit. Obviously, providing an opinion is the most important part of our audit. Once you publish your financial statements, there are many third parties that rely on the information. And so as your independent auditors, it is our responsibility to perform an audit and to verify that the financial statements are accurate and that they're fairly presented in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. Before I talk about the audit process, I wanted to talk a little bit about the concept of fairly stated and materiality, because I think that outside of the audit world, I think there's the perception that the auditors are supposed to test every single transaction and they're supposed to catch every single error. And so obviously, I mean, it would be impossible in our audit to test every single transaction. So an audit is basically employing a lot of judgment and also employing sampling. What that means is that we obtain your population of every single transaction that flows through your system, and we take a sample using audit judgment, and the result of that sample, assuming that all your transactions were flowing correctly, then we have to assume that the rest of the transactions are flowing correctly. And so we are able to rely on that, and we're able to reduce some of our procedures. And again, our whole purpose is that, you know, we can't test every single transaction. So I just wanted to clarify that. And then in regards to materiality, you know, as I stated early, you know, our audit opinion is going to say that it is fairly stated. And so we do employ a materiality, a dollar amount, when we're testing our transactions. And that amount becomes a base for our auditing procedures, meaning that if there's any differences, there's unresolved items, we use that materiality as a base to determine, you know, how further do we go into specific audit procedures, how much do we investigate further, corroborate, and conduct follow-up. So again, I just wanted to clarify that. And our employing materiality is utilizing a risk-based approach, which I will talk about here in a little bit. So just kind of wanted you to keep that in mind as I'm talking about the audit process.
What's the materiality threshold?
As you know, your type of audit has big dollar amounts because of your investments, and so we are dealing with millions of dollars.
So right. Well, you just made it a point to talk about the fact that you employed a materiality threshold, and the simple question is, what's the number?
Yes. I believe it's, give me a second.
I'm just trying to understand what you used.
No problem. We have a base of $23 million, and then we break that down to what we call individual significant items, which is about $7 million. And then we have a smaller threshold of items that we look at in the aggregate. And if they are below that amount, then we consider they're not significant.
And is that the standard of practice? Is that unique to the?
It's the standard of practice. Yes.
So it didn't matter what auditing firm was sitting here. You tell me the same thing.
Correct. Okay. And then in terms again of the audit process, we basically begin with establishing a timeline with your organization. This is a very important process because us determining a timeline and being able to communicate that to your management allows us to be able to complete our audit and be able to for us to deliver on the dates that we promise. Part of our audit is also getting an understanding of your internal control. These are your checks and balances, and I talked a little bit about that, about testing your transactions. Again, we make sure that when we're testing your transactions, that's just meaning that we're making sure that all your checks and balances are there. And then once we complete that, we come back and reassess our audit plan, and then we come back and perform final field work. Now, a big part of our audit process is also when we are confirming with independent third parties. We consider these organizations that are outside of your entity to have just more audit. It's better audit evidence, I'm sorry, just because, again, we're able to obtain information from these outside organizations, or they're just considered to be higher audit evidence. So in that process, we confirm with your investment managers, your custodians, your third-party service providers, including your legal attorneys, to make sure we have a full understanding of any commitments, contingencies, or any litigation that we would be required to disclose in your financial statements. We also send a sample to participants. Again, this is based on our sampling. And we verify various information with them to make sure that your organization's records are accurate. And then we perform our recalculations as part of our audit procedures, again, to corroborate that information. So that's when we're conducting interim testing. And then when we're coming out to final field work, this is when we're basically substantiating all your amounts and disclosures in your financial statements. Once we wrap that up, we have a what we call an exit meeting with management, just so that we can talk about any preliminary findings. Again, just have a communication of where we are at in the audit process before we come out to do our report presentation. So before I talk about our audit opinions, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the significant audit areas. Again, we employ a risk-based approach just because we can't test every single transaction. But using our audit judgment, our history, and our experience with other plans, we select various transactions and accounts that we consider have a higher risk of error, irregularities, or misstatements. So some of those accounts that we selected, again, investments and related earnings, just because of the large dollar amounts there, participant data and actuarial information, the amount of transactions that are flowing through your system on a day-to-day basis, employee and employer contributions, is driven by your participant data information as well, and then we also test your benefit payments. And as Vicki talked about earlier, GASB 67 and 68, that was a big change this year. We had a lot of disclosures that were added to your CAFR. We are required to opine on those schedules, and so we do get an understanding of that information, And then we perform procedures to become comfortable with that information so that we can provide you with our audit opinion. Okay, and so moving on to audit opinions, again, I spoke about the importance of providing you with our audit opinions. There are several opinions that can be provided. The unmodified opinion, which is a clean opinion, obviously that's the opinion that every single organization strives for, but there are situations in which the audit found that there might have been areas where the auditor was not comfortable enough, and so that might trigger you a modify opinion, or even a disclaimer, or even an emphasis of a matter. An emphasis of a matter would be in situations where there was something that the auditor might have not been comfortable enough, and that's what it caused the modification of the opinion. Or sometimes you might have situations in which the records were just not there that caused the auditor to provide a disclaimer of opinion. So just kind of with that in mind, I'd like to go over the first audit opinion that we have issued, and that one is actually in your CAFR, and it's the Independent Auditor's Report, and you'll see that it's pretty well broken down in describing what management responsibility is as opposed to auditor's responsibility. And then on the second page, you're going to see the actual audit opinion. We are issuing a clean opinion. Again, this is not something that every organization nowadays can say they receive. It's very hard. It means that all your records are there. It means that management is performing the accounting correctly, and that we're able to satisfy ourselves with all the information that we receive. So your organization should be congratulated for receiving that clean opinion. I did want to highlight, there's a paragraph right under there discussing emphasis of a matter. This is nothing that would modify our opinion at all. All we wanted to do is highlight the implementation of 67 and two schedules that we are including here pertaining to GASB 68. We just wanted to highlight again the fact that this was a big change. It cost a lot of additional disclosures in your financial statements, and so we just wanted to kind of bring that to your attention.
Did you make that same finding in audits for other public pension plans?
When you say finding, can you?
Yes, the emphasis of matter you just
okay.
described.
Yeah,
did you make that same finding in other audits?
Yes, but I just want to clarify that it isn't a finding. It's just we are emphasizing a matter, that's all. And yes, that's correct. We found that 67, again, was very important just because of all the changes that cost in your financial statement. So, yes, that disclosure was placed for all plans that implemented 67.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And then, as I stated, there's two schedules, and Vicki also mentioned them regarding GASB 68, that we are providing an opinion on the total net pension liability. And those schedules are included in the supplementary section on pages
64.
On page 64. And then the other report that I wanted to discuss is the report to the board. This is just a few reports that we kind of put together in one. And the first one is the required communication to you. And this is just because during the conduct of our audit on our day-to-day, we are meeting with management and talking to management on a day-to-day, and we're not able to communicate to you regarding our audit. And so professional standards require us to provide you with this written documentation so that you have full knowledge and disclosure of important matters pertaining to the audit. Items that we would be required to report to you would be whether we had any significant disagreement with management, whether we proposed any significant audit adjustments, or even if we had adjustments that were considered trivial, immaterial, and we passed. And so the only item that I have to report is, again, the implementation of 67 that's also emphasized here. And then, as Vicki mentioned, there were two other statements, 69 and 70, that were required to be implemented and were implemented. But I did clarify here that they didn't have an impact on your financial statements. So there's one of those that they were required, they were implemented, but they didn't have a significant impact on your financial statements. And then the next report is included in this same report to the board. It's the internal control report. And anytime we conduct a government type audit such as yours, in addition to performing our normal audit procedures, we're also required to test compliance with your laws and regulations, and we're required to review your internal controls and provide an opinion as to whether there were any material weaknesses, significant deficiencies, or any issues in your internal control. And I'm happy to report that we didn't have any items to report. I did want to mention that the audit providing you with a suggested audit opinion that is significant would trigger a material weakness, because nowadays what that means is if your financial reporting isn't making all the adjustments, and the audit indicates that there is a significant audit adjustment proposed, that's basically saying there's something wrong with your internal controls. So, you know, being that there weren't any proposed audit adjustments, says more about your management and their due diligence in the financial reporting.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
I was perplexed by this particular aspect of the report last year, and I guess I'm still perplexed. If I could ask you to turn to page four of the little green packet, which is entitled Independent Auditor's Report on Internal Control Over Financial Reporting and Compliance and Other Matters. The second paragraph under the heading Internal Control Over Financial Reporting seems to have really a large disclaimer about what the extent of the review of internal controls is. And as I read it, it says you express no opinion on the effectiveness of the internal controls. So my question is, what's the point of this if there's no real judgment being rendered about the effectiveness of internal controls? Because to me, it looks like this is more of a letter that says what you didn't do.
Well, I mean,
and I don't mean you personally. I just mean,
I understand. And of course, keep in mind that this is boilerplate language that is utilized by, you know, every single organization that performs a government type audit. But I understand what you mean. It might be quite confusing, but going back to kind of what I talked about, you know, what the whole point of the report, again, is basically to tell you, are there any material weaknesses? Did you have any significant deficiencies? Are there any real issues that you found throughout
Maybe you can cite some examples in the past where you have found something in our system that was wrong, and we've had to make a correction.
Absolutely. So and just like I talked about, you know, just, you know, the audit saying, okay, you didn't book this entry. Here's your entry. It's for $18 million. Just even something like that, we would say you have a material weakness in this procedure. Because if we found this, what others could we have found? So that's an example. Another example of possibly a significant deficiency is if we found, for instance, in your investments, where the reconciliations to your custodians are not being made. That would be another significant issue. And going back to your question, I hear what you're saying, and I know this report is probably not as clear, but all it's basically saying, and going back to what I said, that we can't test every single transaction, and that's why we can't test for the effectiveness of the internal controls. But again, our main responsibility is to tell you, are there any material weaknesses? Are there any significant deficiencies that your organization should be looking at to improve their controls?
So does that mean that in order for you to find a deficiency in an internal control, it would have to arise as a result of the sampled transactions based on the materiality threshold?
Well, Let me explain to you what we do as part of our understanding of our internal controls. What we do is based on the risk areas that we talked about that we consider significant. We get an understanding by talking to the key persons that are handling that particular area, and we look at documents. And we test those to make sure, again, that the controls are there.
So the documents that you're looking at that you're testing, are those the documents, the transactions that meet the materiality threshold?
No. When we're talking about getting an understanding of controls, we're just trying to say, okay, so do you have segregation of duties adequately in this area? If you don't, then that might cause a material weakness, a significant deficiency. It might cause something to not be processed correctly.
Yeah, and let me just ask maybe a better clarification here for Scott's question is, sounds to me like in the internal controls evaluation that you do, it's really based more on inquiry of management on how things are done. Was there really specific testing done of internal control of the internal controls?
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, we do. We spent part of our interim portion of the audit when we come out here is doing just that. I mean, we're looking at participant data.
So you do inquiry of management. That's one test, and you document what you find from what management tells you of what is supposed to occur, and then you test that to make sure
Correct.
that is occurring.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
It led to.
Yeah, I understand. Again, you're not rendering an opinion here. You're just saying whatever tests you conducted, the results show that you're in, well, our practice were in compliance with our policies or procedures, right? But because it's a sampling, it's not a full test of everything we do, you can't render an opinion about the entire process.
On the effectiveness of the internal control, correct.
Yeah, so it's not an opinion. It's just to say that as a result of the test you ran, what you could tell, everything seems to be in compliance.
Correct.
That is not an opinion.
And I think to take that a step further, maybe where you're going, Scott, is the kind of thing that we typically would have an internal auditor do, that and that's where we are having this discussion about an audit committee with an internal auditor, and that's where you get into more of the details of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking. If I went back and listened to the tape from last year's meeting, I'll bet I asked the same questions. I'm feeling a sense of deja vu because I remember stumbling on this internal procedures issue, because to me it looks just like it's an out, basically. If I looked at this 5 years later when all hell was breaking loose because of a breakdown in internal controls, I'm pretty certain you would tell me, you know, we didn't look at the effectiveness of internal controls. It's right there in the letter. So that's how it feels to me, and you call it boilerplate, which, you know, kind of makes me think it is what it is. I'm not sure what its value is. I was just trying to figure out, and I don't think you ever answered my question, if you sampled transactions and you found disparities or problems, wouldn't that be an indicator of a problem with internal controls?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
I don't think you said that to my question. I never got it answered. I was trying to understand what it is you do and how you do it.
Okay, I was just trying to explain, you know what they're trying to relate to you with this language. I was talking more about the actual wording itself. And again, I mean, this is, you know, I can't even go in and try to tweak paragraphs.
Standard opinion issued,
yes,
by the AICPA, yeah. And you don't change it.
But like Deborah was saying, you know, we do, you know, do an inquiry and observe the actual transactions that are happening and then perform a test to make sure that what management said is happening is actually happening. And if we do find errors, then we look a little deeper. Why did this happen? Or, you know, how could it be improved? And then that will follow into our recommendations.
Could you talk a little bit about, the board's had some experience recently on overpayments or payments to people that were deceased, and we continue making payments too. How did you deal with that issue in your testing?
If at all.
And did you find any concern about how we're now recognizing that people may have passed away and we were not aware of it.
Sure. In regards to deceased members that happen, we do look at what procedures you guys are doing in regards to reach out and see, okay, how are we getting notified by the newspaper, by the PBI report? I know one of the instances that happened, it happened because they were still collecting payment, but it was another state, you know, that it happened in, and it didn't get reported to you guys through the proper channels. So those instances, you know, we can't, like, control those instances that happen as well as yourself, but...
Doesn't that send at least one message in terms of our internal control that where somebody is receiving a benefit and is located in a different state, we need to have a higher level of testing, perhaps annually, to determine that they remain alive and entitled to receive their annuity
payments? Yeah, and I believe there is a test that you guys are performing, a live and well check, where you guys are sending over a certain age to make sure that they are alive and well. And either it would have to be signed or they would have to come in and do a certification.
But that's really what I'm getting to, and we do that, and you've tested that, and you're comfortable with our procedures are reasonable.
And it's up to your discretion to what extent. If you feel like, okay, maybe this is a higher risk, maybe we need to dig a little deeper, go a little younger to those people, or maybe focus on people that are older or that are living outside of California, if you feel like the PBI reports are not bringing up the concerns that you guys have.
Are you doing a small group for everybody that meets the threshold? What is the age right now you're looking at?
That would be in regards to the retirees. I don't know what you guys currently, I don't recall what age range you guys currently tested for.
Let's say hypothetically 7, you look at everybody over 7, you're only a sample group of it?
It would be the test that you guys are performing, so I don't know if it would be, I would assume that it's everyone over that certain specification, if it's over that 75 age or something like that.
I got something completely different. Page 2, your required supplemental information. Can you define required supplemental information? And you said it is, and is it important to audit that? And you said in the report that you do not express an opinion to provide any assurances on the RSI. Can you go through that for me a little bit?
Sure. I think you're looking at our main independent auditor's report,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Sure. And I apologize if I didn't go over that section.
That's okay.
I think I got a little thrilled about the whole 67 information. So requiring supplementary information includes certain information that are required by the standards to be disclosed, such as management discussion and analysis.
Uh-huh.
And we do not provide an opinion. All we do is basically tie the numbers to make sure that they agree to the numbers in the statements, and then that the information pretty much is consistent from year to year. But it includes assumptions made by management that we cannot audit. And so that's why there's that disclaimer.
Can you give me an example?
Well, that's what I said right now. When management includes assumptions in their management discussion and analysis, we can't really audit those assumptions. And that's why there's no opinion given.
Can you give me an example of an assumption?
Discount rate.
A number 600 or a number 5. Okay, now.
Assuming. You can't audit, express an opinion on that.
All right.
John can.
Rusty, did you know?
No.
You mentioned earlier that you tested benefit payments. And I think in the past discussions I recall that, you know, there's a handful of them that get pulled. Can you tell me how many were tested here in terms of benefits?
We test 40.
40? Okay.
And it's a sample through, we do specifically test new members that are retiring, mm-hmm. because those are current controls, but we also test older members,
okay.
making sure that the cost of living is being applied properly, or just you know, taking a double check of their calculation, because we can't test everyone over all the years, or each year we don't want to just test you know, new retirees want to test older ones as well.
So in doing that testing, was there a materiality threshold that was used, or is it it's absolutely right, or it, there is something that's not right?
Good question. Yeah, there's no, when we're testing that sort of information, there's no materiality. Anything is reported. Okay. And then I'll just talk about the last report before I turn it over to any further questions. The last report is the agreed upon conditions report. And this is what is also typically referred to as a management letter. And that one, what this basically means is that if we didn't have anything to report in your internal controls report, there might still be other items that we've looked at that were in, that were considered insignificant, but that we still thought it was a good business practice to implement, and or just a further recommendation or item to consider. And so we didn't have any items to report this year, but we did issue this report because we wanted to provide you with the disposition of prior year. The way we handle our procedures is if we have any findings from prior year, they're not just gone. You know, we kind of roll them forward the following year and make sure that they were implemented. And the two items that we had last year were regarding to IT. One of them was related to policies, and the other ones were related to change management. And we did have a consultant this year to assist us with review of your IT general controls. And so based on that review, her procedures perform, and our follow-up with management regarding these two items, we felt comfortable that there were some progress done on them, and so we thought they were sufficient and they're not being reported in the current year. But we did include a status as to why they were considered resolved.
Thank you very much.
I guess it should be. I've seen a number of these reports over the years, not only for CICERA, but for other organizations I've been affiliated with, and it's not to be dismissed that it's a clean opinion.
This is as good as it gets.
That's what I was going to say. We'll probably have to fire Dan Armstrong because you're not finding anything. congratulations on the report.
Thank you. And I just wanted to, as a final comment, thank Vicki and her whole team for providing us with so much support during the audit. You know, we obviously come out and ask for a lot of information. And again, just being able to be here and present to you on time is, you know, a dual effort, you know, with Vicki's team and, you know, being very diligent in working on the CAFR, and especially the CAFR, you know, it's a lot of work, especially with GASB 67 implementation. You know, there was a lot of effort put in there. I know Vicki started working on it since last year, and, you know, I was actually very impressed when I reviewed her CAFR because it was very well thought out. You know, a lot of plans didn't choose to do the roll forward approach. They decided to use current year numbers. And that's a little bit easier to explain, but when you're trying to explain, you know, the whole process of how this roll forward, you know, rolls into your new numbers and you have a different measurement date and whatnot, I think she really put in a lot of effort and produced, you know, a very good document. And you can also see that every year, you know, when you get the GFOA award, you know, there's just small little, two little items. You know, that says a lot about your management. They're putting in a lot of time and effort in their CAFR. So I just wanted to, again, thank Vicki and her team for helping us during the audit.
And I'd like to formally recognize Vicki and the accounting division. There is a lot of work that goes into the audit process, but I really feel it's reflective of the quality of work performed throughout the year by her team. So I just wanted to thank
much of a team. But yes,
I like really to thank
her. Don't press your luck.
And this is, I did want to mention also, it just came to my attention, this is the first year that we haven't had any current year agreed upon conditions and recommendations.
Right. Nice.
So, that's excellent. That's good.
Again, Vicki, my thanks to you on this every year. It's one of the things I refer retirees to. If you want to know what we do or how we do it or where it is, I say read this.
You've been reading that last couple nights?
Like? No, I haven't. I'm taking this with me. Honestly, I have not read this one.
I thought about you while putting this together because I know you love this document.
But I will be reading the whole thing all the way through.
All right, good.
I have read the others.
Hey, Gail, to your comment about conditions, there were those two IT ones. Is that separate?
That was from the prior year.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah. And I did want to also thank Shannon for all of her hard work with the CAFR. I think she's done an amazing job. I think the layout is much cleaner and easier for readers to read. So.
Okay.